Welcome back to the show, Pedro. How are things?
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, things are going great.
Yeah, good. Today we'll be talking just generally about a theme that GlobalX report on and have investment vehicles that offer exposure to, but specifically kind of within the prism of your Charting Disruption report. I've pulled a load of figures from there because I think that'll give us a nice framework to the conversation. And with that in mind, I want to start just more broadly, and then we'll dig into the detail. So thanks to kind of tech advancements, just general innovation, including AI, autonomous vehicles are poised to revolutionize transportation as an industry. So to start, perhaps you can just start unpacking that for us. And how are multiple themes in this space converging to fuel the AV revolution, do you think?
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it, transportation is very pervasive to our everyday lives, right? We commute daily. We move goods all around the world at massive scale. And it is clear that introducing autonomous systems could drastically change the dynamics of the industry, right? Think about the potential impact to productivity when you can have autonomous trucks actually moving goods 24/7 or close to 24/7. Think about the potential impact to safety when perhaps vehicle-to-vehicle communication prevents a car accident out there in so many other areas. So I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but to answer your question about perhaps what themes are really converging to make autonomous vehicles possible, we clearly have, on one hand, sensor technology, right? This sensor technology that it's essentially trying to make sense of the world around us, of course, around the vehicles. Then we have artificial intelligence, machine learning, that it's starting to make sense of all of that data that it's kind of being collected by the sensors and kind of controlling or guiding kind of the vehicles. And even themes like cloud computing, networking technology, that it's essentially enabling the processing of a massive amount of data generated by all of these autonomous vehicles and kind of the sensors within those, and kind of allowing us to have those real-time decision-making on the cars. So I think it's important to recognize, right, that we're clearly at the very beginning of the growth cycle of autonomous vehicles. Just last week, I was in San Francisco, and you can start seeing kind of autonomous, fully autonomous vehicles out there. Waymo has a really nice presence in the city, and it feels like the future is here. But at the same time, we're just scratching the surface, right? It's not like we have seen autonomous vehicles in every city around the world. So we're just getting started. But again, the technology is definitely here and we're just getting started.
Yeah, fantastic. And we'll dig into a few of those sub themes and the individual companies as well. I guess to start, if we're talking about autonomous vehicles, it makes sense to dig into kind of what autonomy means and where we are on that journey to full autonomy. The report mentions five levels of autonomy, and that's kind of the industry kind of classification and standard that's discussed. Perhaps you can just walk us through those five levels and explain where we are currently in terms of real world deployment of AVs at the moment.
I'll perhaps start by answering that, but today you can think about kind of that level four of kind of those mm-hmm. five levels that you mentioned, and that's really where we are today. But, you know, level zero is essentially no automation, right? Level one, it's a little bit of kind of driver assistance. So you have the most basic driver assistant features like a anti-lock braking systems or things of that nature. Level two, you start introducing a little bit more automation. So it's kind of called partial automation. So think about a cruise control when kind of with lane centering. So the car can essentially manage speed and steering under just certain conditions. So it's just partial automation. That's probably where you see kind of the market today at scale, right? So if you go out there and you're buying a car, you're probably going to have a little bit of those kind of lane sensing and features that are here and are pretty common already in cars. Level three, it's kind of what it's called conditional automation. This is where automation is definitely getting more advanced, and especially in kind of high highways, you perhaps can let the car take control. But of course, you always need a driver, a human driver, to be prepared to retake control when required by the vehicle, right? So that's kind of what you could see with Tesla if you're actually engaging in full self-driving technology. So level four, like I said before, really the most advanced kind of level that we're seeing today. It's essentially a control by the vehicle in kind of most environments. So the car can essentially drive in most scenarios, driving environments. However, it's not really for all kind of weather events, right? So that's kind of where we get to the level five, the full automation that we always, of course, kind of that's the ultimate goal for the industry, right? A true self-driving car, pretty much in every single environment, every single condition. It doesn't matter what's the weather or what are the kind of what's the behavior of other drivers. The car is going to be able to do it. That's level five. And again, that's probably going to take years to see on the road. But with level four, I think that's really kind of the next leg of growth for the industry. So hopefully that gives a little bit of context of where we are today.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that sets the context perfectly. And as ever with these sort of cutting edge technologies, regulations are a factor that needs to be considered and can often stymie growth, but I suppose on the flip side can often be a factor that actually incites longer term growth. But just thinking about regulation in respect to AVs, how has that had to evolve as we progress through the different stages? And do we need to see another kind of step change before we're able to see a level four, level five automation fully manifest?
Yeah, regulation, always in innovation, it's kind of a tricky, right? I fundamentally believe that we need to allow innovation to continue its path and address potential issues as they arise rather than, you know, think about it just imposing a limitation or limitations at the outset. Yeah. of that kind of technological growth, right? So I think we need to take a balanced approach that doesn't necessarily constrain the progress that we're seeing in these technologies, while acknowledging, of course, that we need to have a thoughtful consideration of the potential risks. And of course, when we're talking about autonomous vehicles, we're talking about human lives being involved, not only by the drivers, but pedestrians and others. So I think it's going to be a very important consideration. Think about what just happened with not too long ago with GM's Cruise, right? And what happened in California where there was an accident and kind of GM's Cruise technology was involved. And then, of course, California essentially revoked Cruise's license to operate fully driverless vehicles in the state. And as a result of that, we've seen GM really stopping operations of autonomous vehicles here in the United States. So clearly, regulation is just kind of getting started, but you see states like California and a few other places really taking a very progressive approach to allow these technologies to take place. It's going to be also a regulation needs to be thinking about kind of where the locations where these autonomous vehicles can operate, right? Because if you think about cities with a very high density of population, that could be very tricky for autonomous vehicles to operate properly. And as a result of that, you may see actually regulations being a little bit more stringent in those areas. But in areas like Phoenix, Arizona, here in the United States, where all of the streets are essentially like in kind of, it's really a grid and it's kind of very wide streets, easy to navigate, regulations tend to be favorable in those areas. So a lot of considerations here to make. But again, when it comes to innovation, I think it's very important for regulations to let innovation to grow instead of kind of setting limitations at the outset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess when applied well, it can actually be a long-term tailwind for wide-scale proliferation of these technologies. It's kind of a necessary evil, I suppose, to achieve full adoption. Yeah, really interesting. I want to get into then the technology and actually start breaking down the component parts of these autonomous vehicles. Let's start with, before we address an individual component, perhaps you can just give us a sense of the overall kind of value chain. What are the key components that make up this technology?
Yeah, there are definitely, multiple bits and pieces that make autonomous vehicles a reality, right? At a high level, I can think of three main verticals within the supply chain, not even like considering the automakers, but kind of the technology that it's really making this happening. So you have essentially perception, then you have more of the localization and mapping, and then kind of the decision making, right? So those are kind of the three main verticals that are quite important for autonomous vehicles. So when you think about a perception, you can think about sensors pretty much, right? These are essentially the eyes and ears of autonomous vehicles, and they're getting all of this data about the environment, and you're using LiDAR, radar, you're using cameras, all of them in most cases working together to really create these kind of a close to 360 degree perception of the surroundings, right? So you have LiDAR, which is effectively light detection and ranging. And these are systems that essentially emit light and measure the time that it takes for the light to bounce off objects and return to the sensor, right? So it really allows cars and these systems to calculate the exact distance to objects. Then you have radar, which is kind of similar to LiDAR, but essentially it's using radio waves instead of light. And the beauty of radar is that these waves can actually penetrate fog, dust, even rain better than LiDAR. So that definitely makes them more effective in poor weather conditions, right? And of course, then you have kind of cameras that are capturing all of the visual information like the human eye. And this is really providing kind of high resolution images for the systems, right? So that's kind of on the perception side, more so on the localization and mapping. You have kind of GPS, you have high definition mapping, and then more so on the decision making, of course, artificial intelligence and machine learning, like I mentioned before. These are kind of the brains of autonomous vehicles and a lot of the computing that's necessary to make autonomous vehicles a reality, right? So when it comes to autonomous vehicles, there is this rivalry between LiDAR and cameras, right? Cameras with kind of the vision processing, and it's essentially the approach that Tesla is taking. Some people think about this as a kind of with LiDAR, very expensive hardware, more simple software because you have very high fidelity on LiDAR versus many cameras because you have so much processing power, right? So you really, with cameras that are very cheap, you really rely on the processing power, on the computing power that you may have, right? So Tesla, you have seen that they essentially argue that since humans rely primarily on vision for driving, kind of camera-based systems can actually achieve similar results, right? So it's very important to understand, even from an investment perspective, all of these different approaches. And I think from an investment standpoint, there is essentially one fundamental question and also a practical question, right? So fundamentally, we need to ask ourselves, is it better to have all of these technologies combined at the same time, but practically or even economically, can you actually use all of those technologies in a way that makes economic sense if you're a car manufacturer, right? And that's why, again, Tesla essentially embraced camera vision because, again, cameras are very cheap. Yes, you need a lot of computing power, and you're seeing Tesla even buying a lot of GPUs out there, but cameras are very cheap. Introducing LiDAR, introducing radar, that adds to the overall cost structure. And we know kind of how sensitive consumers can be to price changes. So there are a lot of questions here to consider, but that's kind of the value chain and how the technology within these autonomous vehicles really is working.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's a really interesting debate and one that sort of rages at the center of this technology. Are we any closer to understanding which of those technologies is likely to win out, or is GlobalX's kind of outlook that, yeah, there will be some sort of hybrid kind of joining of those technologies within one product?
I think just understanding how rapidly the cost of these technologies tends to decline, effectively as kind of economies of scale kick in. I think at the end of the day, the ultimate approach is going to be just the combined approach. So you're going to take your LiDARs, you're going to take radars, you're going to take cameras. You're going to have a lot of redundancy, which is going to be critical also for regulators to accept and embrace autonomous vehicles in our streets, right? So I think the ultimate approach is going to be the combined approach as an entry-level approach for commercialization. I think what Tesla is doing it's kind of quite interesting, because at the end of the day, it's also about penetrating the market, allowing the market to test and try these new technologies, and then ultimately already have that entry point for consumers and be recognized as one of the pioneers. So kind of that approach that Tesla is taking is quite interesting from a business model standpoint. At the end of the day, again, it might be 3-5 years and they might be able to introduce a lot of those other features to then have fully autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, interesting. And in addition to the sensors themselves, then you touched on AI, but AI as well as computing power, those technologies need to kind of keep up in parallel with the sensor technology, and it all needs to come to a head at the same time to deliver the optimum solution. Where are we in that journey?
Well, like I mentioned before, even Tesla is buying a lot of these GPUs. Of course, the world is today hungry for GPUs. And when it comes to autonomous vehicles, that's not the exception, right? So we definitely need a lot of that computing power that can help these systems to make decisions, real-time decisions, in just nanoseconds, right? So it's going to be quite important to have the most sophisticated kind of AI technology out there. I think one of the most fascinating technologies that I'm seeing that could have a very significant impact when it comes to autonomous vehicles is text to video, right? We saw kind of generative AI really taking that next step when it comes to, you know, going from text to text, text to image, and now going text to video. And I think, again, that has the potential to essentially revolutionize how we think about autonomous vehicles. Because in my view, once you have that text to video capabilities, you can start generating a lot of synthetic data, right? So we've heard in the artificial intelligence world that generating synthetic data, you know, essentially data that it's not coming from real world, but essentially data that it's being created by these artificial intelligence systems, is going to be quite useful to really address or simulate rare events, right? So if you think about it, how an autonomous vehicle can learn about adverse weather conditions or accidents or even aggressive driving by other behaviors, it's going to be very hard for an autonomous vehicle to learn about that, because very rarely that's going to happen in the real world. But at the end of the day, if it happens, we need autonomous vehicles to be able to react properly. So having text to video essentially simulate a lot of these events and allow these systems to be trained on that simulated data, it's better than not having it at all, right? So I think that's going to be a driver of growth within the industry. And again, we're just at the very beginning of understanding the potential of text to video capabilities, but that's, in my view, one of the most powerful applications out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the kind of bearish argument on the simulation conversation would be that maybe safety needs to be kind of brought more centrally into the conversation, which of course it will be. And that is critical to the proliferation of a technology like this. I imagine it's something on the minds of the audience as well, kind of imagining all these self-driving cars around, you know, how is that actually going to manifest practically in the real world? So the report highlights, and this is Charting Disruption, We'll actually put a link to the specific part of the report in the episode description, just so people can look at that in more detail. But the report highlights the potential for robo-taxis to significantly reduce accidents. So, and actually it quantified it quite nicely, but I thought I'd ask you, how do you quantify the actual safety benefit of robo-taxis versus human beings?
I think, you know, from a, again, trying to quantify that, the best way to think about it is how many crashes we're seeing out there for miles driven, right? So, and of course, that's in relation of kind of not only this autonomous system, but kind of in the context of how we as humans actually perform based on that metric, right? So Tesla does a pretty good job out there in terms of publishing and being very transparent when it comes to these safety reports. Actually, every quarter, Tesla reports safety numbers. And last quarter, Tesla recorded one crash for every 5.4 million miles driven where drivers were using their autopilot technology, FSD, full self-driving technology. And just if you compare that to drivers that were using a Tesla but not the autopilot technology, they recorded one crash for every 1 million miles driven, right? So again, 5.4 miles driven versus 1 million miles driven. If you compare that with kind of just the average in the United States in the car industry, you actually have one crash for every 670,000 miles driven, right? So it's an order of magnitude in terms of how much safer these autonomous vehicles can be. And of course, that even opens the doors to think about, is driving ever going to be illegal, right? If these autonomous cars are going to be much better than us as humans to drive, is driving ever going to be illegal? So that's kind of more philosophical question out there. But again, it's clearly that that these autonomous systems are much better than us as humans.
Yeah, just to dig into that really interesting point then. I mean, logically, that makes a ton of sense that a machine, a computer, can drive more safely, more consistently than a human that is subject to kind of anomalous emotional even behavior. But what happens when you've got a hybrid system where you have some self-driving cars that also have to integrate with human beings driving those cars? And for example, you have some extremely erratic behavior on behalf of the human being, say they're drunk driving, for example. How does the technology accommodate for that extreme erratic behavior at the moment?
I talk a little bit about kind of text to video and kind of how that could train these models on kind of that erratic behavior by other drivers or very severe weather conditions. I think we need to understand that perhaps absolute certainty is going to be quite difficult to achieve and just replicating kind of human intuition or even reaction, right? It's going to be quite hard for these systems, but we're getting there. And I think, again, just with the progress that we've seen in the artificial intelligence world and how these systems are really making sense of the world around us, that's going to be a possible and definitely again, kind of a next leg of growth for the autonomous vehicle industry.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, I think we've covered the future potential of this technology extensively, but let's talk about more deeply the current use cases. Are there any specific, and you've kind of alluded to a few already, actually, but any specific cities and regions, first of all, that are heavily kind of piloting this technology at the moment?
Yeah, I think the United States and China perhaps are the two, in terms of countries, the two countries that are really kind of leading and embracing the technology. I don't think Europe is going to be too behind, but definitely there's a lot more kind of progress on the regulation side that needs to happen. I think we need to understand that autonomous vehicles are not available for purchase yet, right? However, like I mentioned before, driverless commercial vehicles are operational. So you can think about kind of robot taxis with Waymo that are operating in geofence areas in certain cities here in the United States, for example. Here in the United States, again, kind of Waymo is operating on kind of Phoenix. It's operating on San Francisco. It's ramping up also their operations in LA and Austin, Texas. So we're starting to see kind of that a slow but steady rollout of autonomous features by companies like Waymo. Like I said before, GM's recently stopped their operations. Cruise was kind of the other top competitor to Waymo in the autonomous vehicle industry, but that accident that actually involved a pedestrian then it forced essentially the California DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicle, to revoke a Cruise's license to operate their driverless taxi business in the state. So, and as a result of that, Cruise essentially stopped their autonomous vehicles operations nationwide here in the United States. And again, we talked about Tesla a little bit as well. Today, they're not operating a robot taxi business like Waymo, but certainly one of the growing opportunity areas for the company in the next few years is that robot taxi business, and perhaps how kind of Tesla buyers can tap into that opportunity to generate an extra income. So there are definitely a lot of companies and kind of more so here in the United States where we're seeing that progress happening.
Yeah, interesting. And you touched on the leaders in the US in particular. Who's leading this space in China at the moment?
So you have a couple companies. Baidu's Apollo platform is kind of that one that is essentially very similar to Google, trying to make strides in the country. At the end of the day, in China, kind of the regulation environment takes a completely different approach. That's kind of the company that it's making the most progress out there.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. And I flagged at the start of the interview that because I think you touched on some really interesting sub themes, I want to kind of get back to those and dig in, because this is a much wider theme than just the autonomous vehicle manufacturers in and of themselves. So Charting Disruption again highlights the potential of autonomous trucks as a particular niche within the wider space. So perhaps you can just give us the kind of elevator pitch for this niche in particular. Why is this segment so interesting?
I'm actually more excited about the autonomous trucking vertical than the passenger vertical or the robot taxi vertical initially, right? And again, as we think about the main areas of commercialization, I think autonomous trucking has massive potential. Just for context, the global trucking market is a $4 trillion industry. And of course, it's foundational for the proper functioning of our economy. So I think there is a lot of kind of an economic incentive for governments and corporations to actually invest in this type of autonomous technology for trucks, right? And what happens in the trucking industry is that it's usually around the world characterized by having very high driver turnovers. You also have a lot of challenges to find drivers. And even when you find those drivers, then there are mandatory breaks. And that's okay, clearly, because we're humans and ultimately we need those breaks, right? We cannot be driving 24/7. And of course, as we understand kind of the unit economics of those businesses, we realize that today 40 to 45% of truck expenses are actually driver related. So once you start making sense of all of that, again, there is really an economic opportunity out there for autonomous trucks. And clearly, these autonomous trucks have the potential to improve utilization rates. So instead of having a truck operating for, call it 8 hours a day, you can actually at least double that number with autonomous features. That's going to translate into greater revenues and margins for the carrier operators of these trucks. And also, you're addressing a lot of those constraints that I mentioned, like driver shortages. So as we think about that today, you have companies like Kodiak and you have companies like Aurora here in the United States that are definitely making a lot of progress when it comes to to autonomous trucking technology. Actually, those two companies are expecting to roll out fully driverless trucks in 2024. I think Kodiak is one of those companies. Kodiak is actually a private company. Aurora is a publicly traded company, but Kodiak's definitely a very interesting company. They have this plug and play technology that they call kind of sensor pods that are essentially replacing the truck's mirrors with a package of all of those technologies that we talked about before, hiding LiDAR, radar, cameras, and of course, combined with computing systems. And you're essentially putting that in place of the mirrors of the truck. And that's really kind of all of the things that you have to use to make a truck fully autonomous, right? So that kind of plug and play feature may really allow a lot of kind of the trucking industry to move in that direction because it's going to be kind of a seamless way to adopt autonomous features.
Yeah, yeah, really interesting. I was going to ask you when this was likely to come to fruition, but some of those companies rolling out as soon as 2024, yeah, really, really interesting. A lot sooner than I would have predicted. Okay, next question then. I want to dig into another sub theme. Again, there's several we could dig into. I've chosen autonomous trucking as the first. The second is the auto loan sector and essentially the anticipated evolution of car ownership models, because I think that's another fascinating kind of sub-segment within the wider space. How do you and GlobalX expect these ownership models to change? What's the opportunity here?
That's a fascinating topic, to be honest with you. For example, I love driving, so I'm not sure if I'll ever stop buying a car without a driving wheel, right? But clearly, I think owning a personal vehicle might become less, let's call it, necessary in the future, especially in areas where autonomous vehicles are actually on the rise. So I think that's going to be up there for consideration for consumers in the next few years. But of course, you never know if driving, like I said before, may even become illegal, right? If all of these autonomous vehicles are much safer than us humans driving, that might be a possibility in the next, call it 20 to 30 years. So, you know, it definitely that has a kind of a cascade or ramifications across other industries. You can think about insurance, for example. That may change because you're going to have less accidents, you're going to have a lower frequency of events, and that translates into lower premiums for consumers. So there is kind of an impact there for insurance companies. And that's kind of just the very beginning of the potential impacts of autonomous vehicles. And like I said before, it's about productivity. It's about how kind of our society or kind of infrastructure is going to have to evolve to accommodate kind of that new reality, that new technology, that it's going to be so pervasive.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting point you pick up on in terms of infrastructure. I want to get onto the investment application here because as you just described, there's so many different segments that people will want exposure to. So having kind of one instrument to ultimately deliver that exposure, I think will be really compelling. But before we do, infrastructure, how is that evolving or has it started to evolve just yet to accommodate for autonomous vehicle proliferation?
Absolutely. I think definitely infrastructure development has to adapt to really accommodate autonomous vehicles, right? So from introducing kind of these designated zones for autonomous vehicle testing on specific streets. That's something that we're seeing cities kind of approaching it in that direction. I think your question is more related towards kind of the smart infrastructure. So you definitely need connected or smart cities. There is that concept out there of smart cities where even traffic signals allow for better communication with vehicles. At the beginning of the interview, I talked about vehicle-to-vehicle communication. That kind of networking infrastructure has to be there to really support that type of development. So I think there's definitely a lot of important aspects for infrastructure development. I don't think there is a secret sauce today when it comes to how that infrastructure has to look like for autonomous vehicles to work. But definitely you have a lot of, again, bits and pieces when it comes to networking, when it comes to how traffic signals are connected to cars, when it comes to how regulations are actually addressing the new norm that it's incorporating autonomous vehicles in our everyday lives.
Yeah. Okay. Really interesting. Well, as I kind of signaled a moment ago, I want to talk about investment application and how to gain exposure, or how people can think about gaining exposure to all of the trends that we've just discussed. There's disruption occurring across multiple sectors as a result of this technology. So how should an individual investor be thinking about positioning themselves to capitalize on autonomous vehicles and that revolution?
I think, to be quite honest, I think investors should be thinking about the full transformation and disruption happening in the transportation industry, right? And by that, I mean that it's not only about autonomous vehicles, it's also about, you know, electrification. So I think investors should be thinking about that broad concept or umbrella, which is the transformation that we're seeing in the transportation industry. So thinking about ways to capture the opportunities across autonomous and electric vehicles is quite kind of the way that here at GlobalX are thinking about from an investment opportunity. So of course, on the autonomous vehicle standpoint, thinking about the companies that are building autonomous vehicles and or kind of developing the hardware and software that actually makes autonomous vehicles a reality, right? And I think for us, it's quite important to approach that from a passive standpoint, right? We're in the very early stages of development and adoption of autonomous vehicles. So picking winners and losers is going to be very challenging. I talk about perhaps the challenges that GM's Cruise face with kind of the regulators here in the United States. That could happen any day with any company. So I think a passive, diversified way of capturing that opportunity is probably the best way forward for investors today. Again, as the market really tries to recognize who's going to be the leader and who's going to be the loser in the space.
Yeah, fantastic. I was going to pick up on that point whether passive exposure made sense as opposed to narrowing your focus. So yeah, glad we covered that one. Just in terms of regional exposure, is it still too early to tell? Would you be looking for kind of a global approach?
I think it's always important to have that global approach, right? I think innovation doesn't happen only here in the United States or China. I mentioned United States, China, Europe, regardless of kind of what innovation platform or technology you're looking at, I think the best approach is always going to be global. Again, it happens to be that today, United States and China are leading the way when it comes to all of these kind of technological developments in the autonomous vehicle, but just having it really an approach that allows you to capture companies, whether they're from UK, whether they're from other places in Europe, whether they're from other places in Asia in the future is really the way to go, right? So again, when it comes to innovation, when it comes to thematic investing, I think it's very important to take that unconstrained approach when it comes to geographic and even sector definitions. I think that's going to be critical for any well-constructed thematic strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree. Okay, well, as we always do on the show, the show's name, The Next Big Idea. So we ask all our guests for exactly that. We've talked a lot about a lot of exciting things and trends, different technologies. We've even mentioned certain company names as well. But if you could pick one thing from that discussion that particularly excites you, what would that be?
Just because it's so new, I mentioned text to video. And I guess just because I'm also very excited about generative AI and kind of the applications of generative AI across our society, I would say again, kind of the text to video technology is probably one of the most fascinating technologies that it's going to have a huge implications when it comes to autonomous vehicles. And we're just scratching the surface again in terms of using that technology to simulate a lot of those rare events that we were discussing today and how that's going to improve this autonomous technology. So I think if I have to pick one of those emerging technologies, I would go with kind of the generative AI implications for autonomous vehicles. And that, in my view, happens to be text to video.
Yeah, absolutely. No, a fascinating pick and certainly one to watch. I think that just leaves me to say thank you very much for joining me on the podcast, Pedro. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me, as always, Hiding.